This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is brought to you by Luton Rising, owners of London Luton Airport, the UK's most socially impactful airport. Find out more at lutonrising.org.uk. This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley, bringing you the best of my Times Radio show. Don't forget, you can download the Times Radio app, wherever you get your apps on, so you can take Times Radio with you. Listen to us while you're at work, or while you're not at work. It's 10 till 1, Monday to Friday, live on Times Radio. It's free to listen on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or on your Times Radio app. Right then, coming up today is Wednesday, so it must be PMQs unpacked. We pause the action live from the House of Commons as Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak go at it. Tim Shipman and Lara Spirit tell you what went down. Before that, though, as ever, on a Wednesday, it's time for...
The Columnists with Ali Burt, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton on Times Radio.
And we say a very good morning to Robert Crabbs, who's laughing already. Why are you laughing?
I always just laugh at Alibert. I just can't.
I think it sounds like a fish, doesn't it?
Of course. I think that's why we kind of have a lot of fun, because basically as soon as we hear Alibert, me and Alice look at each other and just start laughing. And we keep laughing for 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's good. Alice, morning. Nice to have you with us.
Very nice to be here.
Now, Robert, there's something different about you.
I've had my hair dyed.
Why have you had...
I didn't notice.
No, because it's not a dramatic change.
No, it's subtle.
Yeah.
They said it wouldn't give me full coverage, as they call it in the salon. Inevitably, it's for a piece.
It's for Nicola Jill. Nicola Jill's now a feature on the show.
Is she? We've now decided
we could mention her. Because yesterday, Danny and David were talking about the things that she'd got her to do.
Yeah, well, I have to say, I feel a bit envious, because now you've had a free makeover.
Yeah, but I mean, I've had so many of those, you know. I mean, I get spray tans, I get... Yeah.
You know. I actually prefer you, I think, with the grayings.
Yeah, I thought it was...
So your hair's just a bit darker rather than being the silver fox.
I've gone back 10 years to before I was a silver fox. I'm now... brown fox.
You should have been blonde, I think.
I've done blonde for Nicola.
Can you tell us why?
I'm having a photo shoot this afternoon, but I can't tell you that is embargoed.
You're dressing up as someone, but yes. that information is under embargo.
Yes, in case one of our rivals jumps in. Jumps in the meantime because we can't publish before a week on Saturday.
Yeah.
And if anybody else has got a shorter lead time, then obviously we'd be scooped. We can't have that.
Well, we look forward to that. That's something that is something very much to look forward to. Let's turn our attention to, something in our rivals' paper. Somebody's mentioning saying no COVID tapes today. They texted that about 5 minutes after I've been discussing it. But anyway, Hancock rejected Whitty's advice on care home tests. The lockdown files. 100,000 leaked WhatsApp messages revealed.
God, some poor so-and-so's had to go through those.
I think it's fantastic, actually. I mean, Isabel Oakeshott is given them all so she can write about Matt Hancock without Matt Hancock ever realising that they could be used by anyone else. And I know that, you know, she shouldn't have, but on the other hand, you just can't help smiling, because this man is so totally self-obsessed that he only wanted to use his WhatsApp messages for himself. He didn't care about what was happening with COVID. And yet again, it's all about him.
So, yeah, we should explain it. Isabel Oakeshott co-wrote the pandemic diaries, the Matt Hancock
book. Which I'm sure you've read.
Which I'm sure we all... got for Christmas.
That's a revisionist one where he kind of left out anything that wasn't heroic.
Well, she's now putting in what he left out.
He gave her all of his WhatsApps in order to write the diaries.
Yeah, bad
and
move,
then
mate.
And then she's and
published
then she then presumably got paid to help co-write the partial account. And then having taken all the bits out, she's now got all those bits and given them.
So she didn't. I think her excuse actually is quite plausible, is that she goes through the different countries that have already done their review and done their, you know, inquiry into COVID and the pandemic. Yeah. And we haven't. We're literally years away from it. And by the time we ever actually report on this and on what happened in the pandemic, everyone's going to have forgotten it. So what she's saying is, you know what, I wanted this all to come out now. So I'm sure that's not what she wanted. What she wanted was a sensational...
off the record, because they were all on the record for the biography. So it's... Yeah. And somebody's done a bit of poor contractual work with Isabel Oakeshott there. They didn't get her to sign an NDA or anything, did they?
Well, there's been some suggestion, people suggest... She might have signed an
NDA. I think she may have signed one, actually.
Ah. Somebody's messaged in, because we're talking about Theresa May's won an award for best speech of the year.
Yeah, which she deserved.
We asked for other unlikely political awards. Niall says, Isabel Oakeshott for trusted confidant.
Yes, yes.
And I think even James Bethel, who was a health minister, said this morning, I think Isabel's a terrific journalist. She's not a very good friend, which is also possibly true.
But that's what this problem was. It was all about friends. It's all very kind of cliquey and we're getting in all this together. And it horrified me that you could see that Matt Hancock was saying stuff that a lot of them didn't believe in and knew was wrong, particularly on care homes. Uh-huh. And they didn't question him because A, he was a friend, and B, they didn't sort of want to upset him, you felt, in some ways.
Yeah, it's kind of groupthink.
It's massive groupthink. Yeah. And I think, you know, it is important that we hear this.
Is it groupthink? Because actually
Not from Chris Whitty.
The slight problem with the Telegraph stories, it's trying to argue that it's both groupthink and... ministers didn't do what they were told to do.
Well, I think it is both, actually, because I think the groupthink comes from the ministers and comes from some of the civil servants, and then actually it's Chris Whitty on the other side and the scientists. Yeah. And they kept saying, we are following the science. We were told that the whole way through the pandemic.
That was the mantra,
especially to begin with. To believe that. And actually what happens is it's all political, isn't it? I mean, that's what they were doing. It was all about politics.
I think it was the Lib Dems put out a press release this morning saying, revealed, the messages lay bare the chaos at the heart of the government. So, of course there was chaos.
Yeah.
We were in the middle of a pandemic when we didn't have masses of... I feel like I'm sort of mounting the case of Matt Hancock here. We didn't have masses of tests. We didn't have... I mean, there's an argument about why we didn't, which, you know, is more a question for Jeremy Hunt than for Matt Hancock.
Chris Whitty gave very clear advice about care homes, and it was pretty obvious to all of us with the care homes that you really, really didn't want people going in there who had COVID and being shut down.
But the argument this morning, which Matt Hancock, in his many statements he's put out, is that what this leaves out is there was a meeting where they said they didn't have the capacity to do it.
Right.
So when confronted with that, you have to make a choice about
what does he mean then about muddies the waters?
Well, that's not clear. That is literally not clear. Because why? I mean, because what does that mean in terms of... what would work to stop COVID getting into...
Yes, it just sounds like that muddies the messaging water as opposed to what should have been...
Which I suppose it just means done. He wanted to announce they were testing the people going into...
See, I think the narrative that it was all chaos, it was all, you know, it was like the Blitz kind of thing is convenient, isn't it? It doesn't seem that Patrick Vallance and Chris Whitty, they didn't look like ever particularly chaotic people at any stage. They look very sober, very measured. Mm. They were given the advice, which was supposed to be being followed.
Yeah.
And the chaos was in trying to escape not pay the political price for what was going wrong.
But, you know, Patrick Vallance talked about herd immunity at one stage and changed his mind. I mean, I suppose that's the point, is that it's all with the benefit of hindsight.
But also, I think what is important is that we have this inquiry really quickly, because if we don't have it for the next 5 years and it carries on and on, we're not going to know what's happening. We're not going to know if there are any solutions to this, or what we could do or how we could do it better next time. And if there is another pandemic, we need to have some of those things coming out.
And there is a big... part of all this, where the Telegraph for some time has been sceptical and critical of the idea of lockdowns.
Yes.
And so it's called the Lockdown Files, even though nothing really in it so far is about lockdowns.
Because they didn't think the lockdown should have happened.
Because they don't think the lockdown should have happened.
And the other danger is with the delay is there's a natural human desire. I mean, I feel it quite powerfully myself to put the whole thing behind
us.
To think, oh God, what a dreadful 2 years that was. Do we really have to pick over it? I know that you.
My mother died. So every time this comes up again, I think, oh my God, my mother was in a care home, my father was in a care home, and I've now got to think about the whole thing all over again. You don't really want to think about it, is the awful thing. You actually do, as Robert says, put it behind you, but you can't if it keeps coming up. I'd much prefer to get the inquiry over or not have an inquiry at all. I don't want to spend, you know, 100 million quid on an inquiry that's not going to get anywhere.
Yeah. By getting anywhere, we really mean finding somebody responsible, and that is hard, isn't it? It's going to be hard to sort of pin the blame on somebody.
Well, because it will turn out that Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance made some good decisions and they made some bad ones.
Because it's
complicated. It'll turn out that Matt Hancock made some good things, and,
always thought if there was capacity in this for a scandal, it was going to be about care homes, because that seemed to me such an obviously bad decision. And the death rate in care homes was so high. But I don't think this is it quite yet. In terms
I think
of
what is interesting is the Swedish experiment, because they did change everything. Yeah. They didn't, you know, schools were left open. It was much more free. And they've just had their report. And I haven't read that report. And actually, that is one report I want to read. I want to see whether or not, because they actually had a lower death rate than we did. So,
but not significantly, did they?
No, was but it? At the same time, probably children were less impacted. In fact, they know children were less impacted because they didn't have to stop going to school. So it would be interesting to compare that country. That would give
especially
us
when you've got to consider that our death rate kind of now includes people who are dying from cancer that they can't get appointments for, or heart attacks in the street. And
also,
so forth.
It's one of those things where, you know, if we go back, the public loved lockdown. Yes. The support for lockdown. I remember one in five people wanted to shut nightclubs forever. Not just, you know, for now. Yeah. And I wonder whether it will start becoming, it was a bit like the Iraq War. Within a couple of years, no one will be able to remember having supported lockdown, because it was obviously a stupid idea. I thought it was a good idea. Well, much like Andrew Pritchard. Anyway, let's move on, because there's no need to. I've mentioned Andrew Pritchard now. Let's talk about Michael Gove. Because I'm sure this will run and run. Whether or not making the blindest bit of difference, I'm not absolutely sure. Michael Gove has been speaking at the Onward think tank. He suggested that parents who fail to ensure children attend school regularly could have their child benefits cut. Mm-hmm. He said the policy was originally worked up on the coalition but was blocked by the Lib Dems.
I think post-pandemic you can't do this because it's been so difficult to get children back to school. They've had a very difficult time. I think they've got incredibly bad rates of getting children back to school. And I don't think it's going to help. I think you need carrot, not stick on this. You need to help people back into schools. You need to make it more interesting for them to go back in schools. You need to be, it's so exam orientated, the schools. It's, you know, that you need to try and entice children back in, not cut the benefits from their parents.
And the other problem is that the coalition government stopped child benefit being universal. So if you earn over 40,000, I think, you start losing it. So suddenly, this is a policy only aimed at poor families.
This is. I don't think Michael Gove has really covered himself in glory with this. This is sort of invoking. It's a dog whistle invoking kind of feckless, shameless people who let their kids run wild, and there really aren't very many of those people around. I think most people do want to ensure their children get to school, and the idea of cutting, I don't think we should be in the business of cutting child benefit for people who need it. When it was still universal, then maybe, because, I mean, I remember losing child benefit under the coalition, thinking that's a good thing because we didn't need that.
And if your children are, say, anxious or depressed, say you've got a teenager who's really, really finding it difficult to go into school, you're going to be upset enough anyway. It's a really tough decision as a parent if you have got a child who doesn't want to go in. Quite often that is really, really sort of gut-wrenching because you know they're going to miss out on school, they're going to miss out on life, they're hanging around at home. It's not always because of sort of feckless parents. It's you can't actually get very much mental health care for children.
Just as a lot of people have got out of the habit of going to work during the pandemic. Yeah. I mean, it's a struggle for all the companies, private and public sector, to get people into the office. Then that must apply to kids as well.
And also, just as a messaging tool, the government said it was all right for you to miss school during the pandemic. It was all right for you to miss school during the strikes.
Yeah.
But if you have an issue that means your child's not going to school, then we'll take money off you, but only if you're earning, it's actually 50,000. Anybody who earns more than £50,000 has to pay back their child benefit. So, which is an entirely separate thing about the universality.
Right,
of the
I hadn't appreciated
system.
That.
But again, that was a sort of George Osborne thing of just trying to find some money out of the welfare system.
Yeah.
Right, Alice, let's talk about your column today. It's about teenagers vaping. And I have to say, particularly as the father of a teenager, albeit a young one, I hadn't realised quite how massive this has become in quite a short space of time.
It's only really in the last 2 years. They've had these things called elf bars that come from China and are in these 40 different flavours, which are obviously guaranteed for children to like because they're bubble gum, they're all sorts of fruit flavours, there's chocolate flavour, you can get what you want, really. And they come in these bright colours, so they look like felt tips or markers. And they're everywhere in the school. So, you know, one school spent £129,000 on trying to get them out of the loos. They don't let children now go to the toilet in lessons because they're worried they're vaping halfway through the lessons. One mum told me that her child wakes up in the middle of the night to vape because they're so worried about it. And these are very strong. These elf bars are made of nicotine and they are up to 43 cigarettes in each one. They're also disposable, so they're incredibly bad for the environment.
It's extraordinary. Reading Alice's Colin Robert, just the idea of, was one child who was setting an alarm to wake up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To puff on a vape at 3 a.m. so they could wake up without withdrawal symptoms?
I smoke normal cigarettes, and not even, I don't wake up at 3, I don't smoke in my sleep.
Don't you sit in bed in a
velvet
smoking jacket?
Yeah, I used to. Back in the day, I used to lie there, I was talking about this with my wife the other night, I used to lie there with an ashtray balanced on my chest. Imagine.
Oh my God.
Imagine how times change.
Like Onslow in Keeping Up Appearances.
Yes, yeah. I didn't, but I never set an alarm for 3 a.m. because my cigarettes have got 43 less amount of nicotine in. It's extraordinary. I mean, vaping kicked off as it was supposed to be the way of the gateway out of smoking cigarettes, wasn't it? And then it exploded as an industry in its own right. I mean, as you know, I travel around doing reporting around Britain quite a lot. And the one thing you can always see in a high street, which is maybe denuded of other shops, you've got the charity shop, you've got the tattoo parlour, you've got the nail bar, and you've got the vape shop, which is something that just wasn't there 5 years ago.
Yeah. So you go on a bus, you go on a tube, you look there in hedges, they're literally scattered everywhere because you just bin them. And that's what's so depressing as well, is it's not only really bad for your health, which you can say it isn't because it's pure nicotine, but we have no idea what their health results are going to be like this in 20 years' time, particularly with children.
Children being addicted to something strikes me as not good.
Well, it's also when they can't go into exams. So one teacher was saying that he has to have nicotine patches for them all because they won't go into a 2 or 3 hour exam because they're so addicted. And half students now say that they're vaping, and that is extraordinary.
Yeah. I mean, that's a throwback.
Last year, there was a report out on how to move to, what was it called, obsolete, making smoking obsolete. It was an independent government report. The government's yet to respond to it, but it was written by Javed Khan, who's on the line now. Morning, Javed.
Good morning.
Your report talked about promoting vaping as an effective tool to help people to quit smoking tobacco. Has the enthusiasm for helping people quit smoking created an entirely separate problem of a lot of children who are addicted to vapes instead?
Well, thank you for the intro. I mean, that was one aspect of quite a detailed report. So it wasn't just about vaping on its own. You know, it's a package of solutions to how we can make this country genuinely smoke-free. I mean, my research for that report showed that, firstly, vaping is not a silver bullet, right? So it's a part of a package of solutions. It's not perfect. And as was just said a minute ago, you know, it hasn't been around long enough for for any serious longitudinal studies, you know, like we know about cigarettes. We know nicotine-based cigarettes are going to probably kill 2 out of 3 people who use them. There is no such evidence around vaping. But there is evidence to show already that they are between 50 and 95% safer than a traditional cigarette. However, it's always better not to smoke and not to vape either. The point you're talking about today is very close to my heart as well, about young people and the attraction to vaping. And I go to some lengths in my report about recognizing this and saying to the government, they've got to act and act fast because there is an issue out there. And I say they've got to ban the cartoon characters and the appealing packaging, which is designed specifically to attract young people. They've got to review the flavors. You know, why have we got bubblegum flavor, for example? What's that about? It's about attracting young people. We've got to stop vaping companies from handing out vapes to young people for free. They can currently do that. There are no controls on it. I would also say we've got to review the school health curriculum to include the risks of vaping alongside the risks of cigarette smoking and alcohol. So there's a range of interventions that the government really should be seizing the moment now and doing it before it really becomes a big problem.
Your report came out in August last year. Have you got any sense of the government being gripped by this?
Well, no, it's been quite disappointing, really. You know, I understand there's been lots and lots of conversations and lots of paper flying around within the department, but no decisions being taken. So dithering is probably one way of explaining it. But having said that, you know, let's have some sympathy. We know there's been quite a few other things to deal with in government last summer and winter. Having said that, though, the opposition have certainly seized the moment. So you may have heard about Wes Streeting saying that if a Labour government comes into play in a couple of years' time, they will go out to consultation on all of the recommendations in my report.
Alice, the point that you make in your column is just that we don't know the long-term impact on this, and it would at least make sense to take some action now.
Yes, and it's not about banning it.
In years to come.
Yeah, I mean, what I find is it's just very rare there are easy solutions, and this is an easy solution. If it's to, vaping is to help you stop smoking cigarettes as an adult, what you do is you make them into adult things to use so that you don't have the bright colours, you don't have all the different flavours. And what's shocking is that these Elf bars are coming from China where they've banned the flavouring and the colours. So actually they're not letting their children get hold of them. So why are we then letting our children have them? And it's the same, lots of countries around the world have banned them. Why are we actually letting our children have these things?
I completely agree with you, Alice. I mean, vaping is a good quit tool, and that's all it should ever be. Mm. So, unfortunately, it's becoming a cool tool for young people. And that's what
is your suggestion that basically then it should be plain packaging, maybe even prescribed by a doctor helping someone to quit, and it just shouldn't be available on the high street in bubblegum flavour at all?
Yeah. I agree. I think we should move as quickly as possible to prescribed vaping through GPs.
So it's something you get from a chemist rather than from a newsagent, basically. Or a specialist shop.
Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson then. Of course, you can read them both in The Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next, it's PMQ's Unpacked.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is brought to you by Luton Rising, owners of London Luton Airport, the UK's most socially impactful airport. Find out more at lutonrising.org.uk.
You're listening to the Redbox podcast. Now it's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Tim Shipman.
And Tim Shipman is here looking resplendent in pink again.
Well, you know, it was so popular last time. I actually got messages saying nice top and things like that.
Well, there we are.
So I thought we'd give it another whirl.
If that's not a good reason to get on YouTube, I don't know what is. Go to Times Radio's YouTube channel and you'll be able to see Tim in his pink. Tim, I genuinely don't know what Keir Starmer might choose to go at today.
No, I mean, the big stories are not obvious sort of PMQ's fodder. Refighting the pandemic might be something that Keir Starmer wants to get into later in the year when the inquiry gets going. But I struggle to see that that's going to lead to six questions today. And the Brexit stuff, they've said often enough that they'll vote for this deal. And in the absence so far of ERG kicking off or DUP going beyond a few mild criticisms, there's not really much to pull at in the same way Starmer did last week in terms of ramming a chisel between Sunak and his party. So, maybe he's come out with these five missions, things on the cost of living, things on crime, that sort of thing. Whether he wants to try and illuminate one of those for the nation, get back to big, broad arguments about the state of play after, a few weeks of sort of much more detailed, kind of granular news, and try and frame the rest of the year. That's possible, I guess. But no, it's one of those where there's a bit of a challenge for Labour, but it's kind of interesting to see what they regard as important and how they decide to frame things today, because that'll tell us a great deal about how they plan to move forward.
Today might be a day for the old William Hague trick of dance around the folder. You know, do something on aardvarks, then something on zoos, and and then Rishi Sunak really needs to get around the
Those are too simple. You want to go for something about 2/3 of the way through the alphabet, don't you?
It's interesting, actually. Do you file aardvarks under zoos? That would be the question. Is it all animals?
Yeah.
Anyway, there's an interesting question. Looking at the House of Commons, lots of MPs are wearing daffodils on their lapels today because...
St David's Day.
It's St David's Day. Well, in fact, I say that. Lots of Labour MPs are wearing them. They're not on the government front bench. Rishi Sunak's not.
I know this because one of my chums is a Welshman and he sent me a picture of a dragon this morning.
Well, there we are. Rishi Sunak's not wearing one, though. Nor is Suella Braverman or Dominic Raab. Maybe Dominic Raab threw his at someone. Allegedly, we don't. I'm not saying that was just a joke.
Well, I was trying to see whether Angela Rayner was wearing one because she admitted wearing a wig the other day.
Did she?
When she goes out on a night out, she likes to wear a wig.
Does she? What? She doesn't get recognised?
Apparently.
Maybe Michael Gove should try that.
That's what she suggested.
Well, what's weird is Jeremy Hunt's got one on. The chance he's got a daffodil on.
A wig?
No. And obviously the Welsh Secretary, David Davis, has got one on.
Very wise.
TC. But no, not Rishi Sunak, which is a surprise given that there was some YouGov polling out this week saying the Tories are facing near wipeout in Wales. I think I'd have probably stuck one on. Anyway, we can go live to the House of Commons now to see who's got a daffodil on and who's got a wig on. It's question number one from Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And can I join the Prime Minister in wishing everybody a happy St. David's Day? Mr. Speaker, after 13 years of Tory failure, the average family in Britain will be poorer than the average family in Poland by 2030. Exactly. That's a shocking state of affairs. If the Tories limp on in government, we're going to see a generation of young people learning to say Auf Wiedersehen Pet in Polish, aren't we?
Minister. 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 Mr. Speaker, it's clear to everyone that the biggest impact on households' living standards is the energy prices that we're suffering at the moment as a result of an illegal war in Ukraine. And I just remind the honourable gentleman what we are doing to ease people through that. Because of our energy price guarantee, right now the government is paying over half of a typical household energy bill, saving households right now £1,000. It is one of the most generous support schemes globally. Now, he knows future decisions to support cost of living are for the budget, but if he's concerned about the cost of living, what he should do is stop making inflationary, unfunded spending commitments and back our plan to halve inflation.
There we are.
Cost of living.
Cost of living. And...
which we're now learning to say, like we used to say, schools and hospitals. It's all one word, cost of living.
Cost of living is all one word. And Keir Starmer addressing the problem of when you make a big speech on the economy and nobody takes any notice because there's other news on Brexit.
Better have another go at it.
Just repeat the same line. His big line earlier this week was that Britain's on course to be poorer than Poland. And he thought he'd have another go at it.
Well, then he talked about our Wiedersehen Pet, which is a bit of a retro reference.
Old,
I mean,
how old do we think that is?
1983, 1985, I think, with the two series.
Anyone on YouTube who wants to tell me? It was on from, originally, it seems like it was on from 1983.
Bingo.
1984, then it came back in 1986.
That's right. Yes,
and then you had another go in 2002 and 2004, which I think was
we could probably forget about the last one.
So you'd have to be
my age, basically, well over 40 to have a clue what he's talking about there.
But also you need to have watched it and understood it and have got the idea.
And just for those who didn't watch
it. Yes, please do. Let's unpack.
A bunch of British brickies, primarily, who were unable to find work in the torrid times of early 80s Britain, went to Germany and built stuff and created lives there and sent their money home to their families. And it's one of those sort of classic ITV comedy dramas where, it was quite moving and it was quite funny and it was a you know, a good ensemble cast of guys enjoying themselves. What I rather regret there from Keir Starmer, it's all very well saying you'll have to say Auf Wiedersehen in Polish. It would have been a lot more impressive if he had done.
Yes, let's have a look and see what that is. Yeah, I wonder whether somebody in the office thought they'd have a go. And so it's what, goodbye pet in Polish. Let's see if we can. In terms of the detail of it, Rishi Sunak accusing Labour of inflationary unfunded spending commitments. And actually, the big complaint you get from Labour MPs and front benchers right now is they're not allowed to commit to anything.
No, indeed.
That Rachel Reeves is preventing them from making any
big
spending
commitments. She's ruling with a rod of iron, we're told. So, yeah, it's an intriguing aspect to this. Sorry, I can't think of anything more intelligent.
Well,
to
let's
say
go.
About
well,
it,
we'll
really.
Go back
You're
to that
absolutely
comments.
Correct.
I will see if I can get to the bottom of how you say Auf Wiedersehen Pet in Polish. You and I will do this before the end of
it.
PMQs. Let's go back then to the House of Commons. This is question number two from Keir Starmer.
The dictionary definition of unfunded commitments is last year's kamikaze budget. Yeah! Country in the G7,
kamikaze
still
budget.
Poorer than it was before the pandemic, and he stands there pretending it's all fine. Total denial about the damage and decline that he is presiding over. Delivering growth and tackling the cost of living crisis will mean standing up to vested interests. Energy bills are going to go up by £900 in April. He knows he's going to have to act, but who's going to pay? Hard-working families through higher taxes and more borrowing, or the oil and gas giants celebrating record profits?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I know the honourable gentleman. He made a rare trip out of North London to visit Davos. To visit Davos recently. Perhaps while he was there, he missed the survey of 4,000 global CEOs from 100 different countries that ranked the United Kingdom as their number one European investment destination. Now, if he's serious about getting the economy growing, then he should stand up to the vested interests in the unions and back our minimum service levels.
People just throwing out all sorts of old lines. Kamikaze budget. We've not had that for a long time. And then Rishi Sunak having a go at Keir Starmer for going to Davos.
Yeah.
It was about 6 weeks ago, wasn't it?
That's a while ago. And also, you know, it's not like he's never been to Davos. And then we had minimum service levels.
Minimum
I'll be honest, it was just a sort of word soup, wasn't it?
Soup.
And I'm too busy excitedly trying to find out what our feeder's own pet
is. How do you say goodbye pet in Polish? We've now established why Keir Starmer didn't attempt it, because this is it, according to Google.
Żegnaj zwierzaku.
And again?
Żegnaj zwierzaku.
Żegnaj zwierzaku.
Żegnaj zwierzaku.
Żegnaj zwierzaku.
Żegnaj zwierzaku.
Żegnaj zwierzaku.
Yeah, there we are. Very good. I'm glad we sorted that out. There's nothing more really to say about that word soup, I don't think. Let's go back to the House of Commons again. This is question number three from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, here's the thing. All the CEOs of business saying there's only one party with a plan for growth, and it's this party here. And there's only one party that broke the economy, and they're sitting there. Now, on energy bills, it's not as complicated as he pretends. Oil and gas companies are making vast, unexpected profits, whilst working people face misery of higher bills. He can boast all he likes, but companies like Shell didn't pay a penny in windfall tax last year, and they're still not paying their fair share now. Why doesn't he admit his mistake, get rid of the loopholes in his botched windfall tax, and finally choose family finances over oil profits?
Mr. Speaker, there's a theme here. He seems to forget, as Chancellor, I introduced a new tax on energy companies. Energy companies will pay a 75% tax rate on extraordinary profits, comparable, indeed higher, than other North Sea nations. Now, that's what his shadow levelling up secretary called for recently.
Lisa
but I've
and
got
Andy.
Good news for them. We did it a year ago. They've got to keep up. I know, Mr. Speaker, they claim to support levelling up, but they really do need to keep up.
Yeah! Okay.
Has everyone gone mad?
No, we're they're just on, doing dad gags, aren't
but
they?
They're now. I wonder how long ago Lisa and Andy said that about windfall tax.
Well, look, there's an important thing here. This is good terrain for Labour to push on because we've just had a new energy price cap ruling, which will mean that despite all the help the government's been pouring in at really quite vast expense, bills are still going to go up.
And
because the government is withdrawing some of its support, the big debate ahead of the budget later this month is that... do they keep that level of support going? I think it's going to be quite politically difficult for them if they don't. That doesn't mean they'll do it, but this is going to become a focus of a lot of lobbying from the opposition, from a lot of interest groups, and I would think from some Conservative backbenchers to try and sort of just buy a bit more time to get through the problems and wait for the drop in the cost of energy to start to filter through to customers. And then we have this sort of brilliant exchange about windfall taxes, which was largely speaking Keir Starmer going, why don't you do the, your windfall tax is rubbish? And Sunak saying, I did a windfall tax. And it's like, yeah, we know you did. which, to be fair, is more than Boris Johnson or Liz Truss ever used to say. They used to deny doing it even when they'd done it.
It had a strange name when Rishi Sunak did it the first time. Additional profits levy.
Yes.
That's also big. Energy, yeah.
Which was that he didn't want to be seen to be doing the windfall tax by his own side. But as soon as Labour have a go at him, he's like, look at me and my windfall tax. So,
Unfortunately, our feeders in pet is becoming more complicated. Jane has been in touch saying a better translation would be Zobagzny Kokani. I should have checked that because that could be deeply offensive to all of our Polish listeners.
Is that because we're... rather than pet as an animal, we're doing sort of love or
pet
something.
Pet is maybe.
A term of affection.
Jane, if you want to get in touch. In fact, Jane, if you text us 8722 start message of the word times, we can get you on. Let's get him on the phone.
Send us a voice note.
Send us a voice note. send us your phone number, Jane. We'll get you on. You can give us some Polish lessons. Then we can pass it on to Keir Starmer. Because frankly, that makes as much sense as what's going on in PMQs today. Because we've got to, for legal reasons, let's go back to the House of Commons question number four from Keir Starmer.
Starmer! He introduced a tax on Shell and they haven't paid a penny. Fantastic work. If he was serious about investing in the future of the country, he'd start with housing. A few months ago, his backbenchers forced him to scrap house building targets. At the time, he stood there and said it would mean they would build more homes. Well, would you believe it? A few months later, the Home Builders Federation say house building is going to fall to its lowest level in 75 years. Now, he can change course on this. He can bring back targets and planning reforms, or he can duck that fight and let a generation down. Which is it?
Prime Minister. Actually, Mr. Speaker, we've had recordly high numbers of house building and indeed the highest number of first-time buyers in around 20 years under this government. But he talks about investing for the long term of our country, and that's important when it comes to energy security, Mr. Speaker. But Labour's policy is to oppose any new oil and gas licences in the North Sea. It is an absurd policy that would see us paying billions to countries abroad for our energy while shipping it here with twice the carbon emissions. It's typical political posturing. It's bad for the economy. It's bad for our security, just like the Labour Party.
Well, because of the noise, I don't think the Prime Minister is hearing the questions, because I do think it was on house building. Keir Starmer.
He took the words out of my mouth.
Well, that's a better way to have a pop at someone as well, isn't it,
yeah,
from Lindsay Hoyle, than the sort of, you know, I need to stop you doing this or whatever.
Have a cup of
just
tea. Have a cup of tea.
Take the mickey out of them.
Yes, we're on to house building now.
Yeah, you know, so you're right. We've gone to H in the alphabet.
Yeah.
Flicking through.
So what did we have? We had Poland to begin with, then kamikaze budget, then the windfall tax, now on to house building.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's there's a theme and he's working his way through it. Yeah, I mean, house building is a classic generational failure of all the whole British political class. But yes, they're right to draw attention to the recent end of those targets.
Exactly. But Keir Starmer committing to targets and planning reforms. there's a reason why the Conservatives haven't done all that. It's because it ends up being really controversial in local areas.
It's always very difficult in local areas, but without... But frankly, there are some things it's easier for Labour parties to do and there are some things it's easier for Tory parties to do. It's probably easier for a Labour party to do housing reform because it doesn't have shire counties getting hoity-toity in Tory seats. They don't mind upsetting Tory seats. In the same way, it's easier for Labour to reform the NHS because they're essentially trusted with the NHS, and if the Tories come along and try and reform it, it tends to run into trouble, which is why... most Tory governments just chuck money at it and hope it will go away. And then we saw a classic of the pivot, didn't we, from Sunak. I don't much... You know, he was told, you're about to have the worst house building for 75 years. He said, well, it has been good. And by the way, pivot, energy security, that's very important as well. And then a classic sort of Sunak point, you know, a man who clearly has, you know, immersed himself in the detail. And he's probably right to say that Labour's policy is a bit bonkers on oil and gas licences, but, you know, there's obviously political reasons for opposing that too if you're doing greenery. And this shows how complicated government is. You want energy security, so you need to need your own supplies of energy. You want to do greenery and saving the world. It's quite difficult to start promoting oil and gas. This is government, and it's difficult. And it's easy to score points in both directions, and that's why we're here, because it's Prime Minister's question time.
And it's absolutely all over the place. Loads of you... getting in touch about...
Żegnaj zwierzaku.
Yeah, good. But that's a goodbye pet in Polish. Jane won't come on. She says, I'm not Polish. Get one of your Polish listeners on. Jen says, you've slightly missed the point with Widzim pet. Keep the pet. It's affection name like love. You just need the goodbye in Polish. So it should be Widznesia. No, Widzenia pet. And Helen says, goodbye pet in German is auf Wiedersehen Haustier. So you really just need to translate goodbye in Polish. So it's du Widnesia pet. Anyway.
That's true. The pet doesn't change, does it?
No, so we just want the goodbye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, well, we've made a Horlicks of that.
So this,
we?
So it should be this.
Do widzenia.
Do widzenia.
Do widzenia.
Do widzenia pet.
Do widzenia pet.
Do widzenia.
Do widzenia.
I mean, I think Keir Starmer could have had a go at that.
He could definitely have had a go at that.
Do widzenia.
Do widzenia.
Do widzenia.
Do widzenia, pet.
Do widzenia,
pet. Do widzenia.
Who knew this is where we're going to end up today? I mean, right, we've still got two more.
I don't want to cast aspersions, but this is more fun than what's going on in the chamber, isn't it?
This is why you see, on the other side, they're just playing out PMQs. You'd be absolutely, I was almost swore then, you'd be bored witless, is what I was going to say. Let's go back to the House of Commons. This is question number five. Well, my joke wasn't that good.
At Alden House.
I think we were shouting more from Lindsay Hoyle.
On House building, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, that's the best
the
response.
That's the lowest
so far.
Level for 75 years. A whole generation of people desperate to get on the housing ladder. 13 years in power. And all he's got to say to them is, it's somebody else's fault, let me deflect. No wonder they're furious with his government. And it's not just bills or housing. Families are paying over £1,000 a month just to send their child to nursery. If he scrapped his non-dom status, he could start to fund better childcare, put money back in people's pockets and get parents back to work. Seems a pretty simple choice to me. So what's he going to choose? Wealthy tax avoiders or hard-working parents?
Well, Mr. Speaker, if we want to see what happens with house building under a Labour government, just look what's going on in London, Mr. Speaker. Well, and when it comes to tax, the facts don't suit his argument. Let's just go over them. The wealthiest pay more tax, the poorest pay less tax than under any year of the last Labour government, Mr. Speaker. Now, about his plans, he's already spent the money he claims he'd raised from that policy on five different things, Mr. Speaker. It's the same old Labour Party always running out of other people's money.
It's a job to keep tabs on this. So we had a bit more house building, then we've moved on to tax and benefits.
Yes. I mean, I don't know what to say, really. The question was... not very exciting. The answer, though, interesting little sort of clue there towards the end of Sunak's thing where he talked about, you know, he's already spent this money that he said going to spend on five different things. Now, that is a classic trope of an election campaign where the research departments of your parties get to work on everybody's pledges. You know, the IFS and everybody else pours over it. But you can see, I think Jeremy Corbyn's lot, according to the Conservative Party, spent certain tax rises about 20 times over. And if they're, you know, one of the things that the Tories will hope to have achieved is to have stabilised the economy by the end of the year, and they will still then run, because they have to, because it's a classic trope of a campaign, that, you know, Labour can't be trusted with the economy. And they'll say, you know, despite everything we talked about before, despite Rachel Reeves stopping people spending money, if it looks like they have spent it multiple times, you can guarantee that that'll be all over the posters, all over the digital ads. And that's what, you know, Keir Starmer will be running it. You know, we need, it's time for a change. And the Tories will be saying it's too risky. And that's, you know, everything we know about the next election already. And, you know, too busy running out of other people's money. It's a bit of an old line, but it's quite a good quote.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
1976, it seems to have been. She was on the TV, so it was after she'd become leader of the opposition, but before she got into government, and she said, "Socialist governments traditionally do make a financial mess. They always run out of other people's money." So reaching deep into the history book, even older than our Alfiedersheim pets, but it's a good line, and people like it, and it. And it got a cheer from the back benches.
Yeah, and again, after a pretty slow start, the last couple of questions, the Tories behind seem a little more satisfied than they were at the beginning of this exchange.
David's been in touch. This programme needs a serious rethink. Annoying on so many levels. The skitting in jokes, annoying explainers. I mean, that's literally the point of why we're here, to explain things. Tim is interesting. Matt is woeful.
I think that's very unfair.
Do widzenia.
Yeah, goodbye, Dave. Let's go back to the House of Commons. Who knows how Keir Starmer's going to tie all of this up together in one last exchange. This is question number 6 from Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer! Mr Speaker, he's never happier than he's pretending everything's fine or blaming someone else. And didn't we just see it there? He is choosing tax avoiders over hard-working parents. Mr Speaker, I don't want to finish this session without asking about the COVID disclosures in today's Daily Telegraph. Now, we don't know the truth of what happened yet. There are too many messages and too many unknowns. Oh, but families across the country will look at this, and the sight of politicians writing books portraying themselves as heroes or selectively leaking messages will be an insulting and ghoulish spectacle for them. At the heart of this is every family who made enormous sacrifices for the good of the country, or who tragically lost loved ones. The country deserves better. The COVID inquiry has already cost the taxpayer £85 million and hasn't heard from a single government minister yet. So can the Prime Minister assure the House no more delays, that the inquiry will have whatever support it needs to report by the end of this year?
Yeah. Minister!
Well, Mr Speaker, the last couple of years were an incredibly difficult time for everyone involved in the health service, and I pay tribute to all their hard work, and I know the House will join me in that regard. And now, rather than comment on piecemeal bits of information, I'm sure the Honourable Gentleman would agree with me, the right way for these things to be looked at is the COVID inquiry. That's why we've established the COVID inquiry. And he will know, as I have, he has mentioned it one or two times before that he was a lawyer in a previous life, that there is a proper process to these things. It is an independent inquiry. It has the resources it needs. It has the powers it needs. And what we should all do in this House is let them get on and do their job.
I mean, I think I could have scripted that answer, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, it'll finish when it finishes. It's not up to me. But 85 million is a lot.
Yes. I mean, that's a phenomenal. I mean, that might be a real shock to people, £85 million.
To me, I must confess. That's a lot of, presumably, a lot of staff and a lot of buildings and a lot of sitting around and gathering evidence.
And trawling through WhatsApps.
Well, as it will now be. Interesting, though, that Starmer sort of gave Hancock the benefit of the doubt there and said it's not proven yet, and Hancock's been pushing back. I mean, those not following this, essentially there are WhatsApps in which it appears that Hancock declined the advice of the medical experts to test everybody going into care homes and decided only to test people leaving hospital. He claims there was a meeting at which it was decided, including by the scientists, that that was impractical, and that that has been omitted from the reporting. So it's a bit murky, Starmer not overcommitting to one side or the other on that. But yeah, trying, I think, to be fair to Starmer, I don't think that was, in a sense, an attempt to get Sunak to commit to finishing the inquiry. I think it was more a case of, we really need to talk about this at some point today. And this is a way I can find a procedural way of getting into it without sort of taking sides in the debate itself.
And if we're being really, really cynical, it's always quite handy if you're the Labour leader to, you know, insert yourself in a story of a paper which isn't always terribly friendly towards you.
I dare say there will be a headline in tomorrow's Telegraph saying Starmer calls for, you know, fast results.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah.
And so
job done in that sense.
Sure.
almost the most explicable and
yes, at least made more sense compared to everything else.
Purposeful thing that happened today, really.
Well, there we are. Alfieda's in pet indeed. Lara Spirit is here. You have bought us the best of the rest. You've been watching the others so that we don't have to. What have you bought for us?
So we said before that it was going to be a really fascinating week and we were expecting some interesting contributions on Northern Ireland. There was much more from Conservative MP backbenchers on local schools and even from about the ceramics industry from one MP than there was on kind of substantive engagement on whether or not they'd be supporting Rishi Sunak's flagship Brexit deal. But an interesting question that I think we'll start with from Stephen Flynn, who is, of course, Westminster's SNP leader. What is interesting about this, this is about the comment mentioned many times in the chamber today, yesterday, by Rishi Sunak to the effect of seemingly praising the single market and Northern Ireland's unique access to it. But the interesting thing that people should listen out to in this is how Labour are targeted in this question as well. So just have a listen to this.
David Flynn!
Mr Speaker, let's be clear. What the Prime Minister said yesterday was that EU single market access will be a good thing for business. Now, of course, that's in contrast to the leader of the Labour Party, who said in December the EU single market access would not boost economic growth. Does it hurt the Prime Minister to know that the Labour Party believe in Brexit more than he does?
Yeah.
Mr Speaker, with regard to Northern Ireland, the important thing to note is to avoid a land border on the island of Ireland between north and south. That is what is crucial to achieve in getting the right framework for the arrangements in Northern Ireland. And the businesses there that trade across that border on a daily basis with complex supply chains need and value that access. That is something that the Windsor framework has sought to achieve and I believe delivers it. It's not about the macro issue of membership of the European Union. It's about getting the right mechanisms in place to support businesses and communities in Northern Ireland. And I would say to the Honourable Gentleman, he knows better than that. He knows that this is about Northern Ireland, and I hope that he can support what we've agreed.
Interesting. Do you think, Tim Shipman, that it was a mistake by Rishi Sunak? Did he just get overexcited when he was in Northern Ireland, talking up the deal and the benefits of Northern Ireland, thinking that people in the rest of the UK might not be listening?
Well, there's always a danger of that. I mean, you know, this has been the case with the deals that they've been doing over there, that it was effectively going to get access to both places. And it, if you're trying to sell it to the Northern Irish, saying a bunch of businesses might want to come and locate here is a good thing. You can also, frankly, sell it to the rest of the UK on that basis too, that, you know, this can become a hive of a lot of industry that we can benefit from as well. But yes, in terms of the internal machinations of the Conservative Party, eulogising access to the single market is slightly problematic.
Slightly problematic. And Laura, interesting the point that you make, that Stephen Flynn now facing in two directions, not just duffing up the Tories, but feeling that he needs to also take a swipe at Keir Starmer.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's been one of the main features of commentary during this SNP election, right, that a number of pollsters are saying that because of the departure of Nicola Sturgeon, Labour can actually finally set some quite optimistic sights on winning a much higher number of seats north of the border than we might have originally thought they'd done had she not departed. So I think that's why you might end up seeing in Prime Minister's questions clear attacks, not just on Rishi Sunak, but also on Keir Starmer too.
There's probably 12 to 20 seats that are now back in play that weren't. And that's quite a big prize, you know. If the SNP is going to keep making the argument that it has a moral right to hold a referendum, if it goes backwards drastically at the next election, that's not going to help it one bit. And Labour is arguably the biggest threat to them now.
Yeah. So they probably need to spend more time worrying about that than the Tories. We've got a Tory MP next, haven't we, Lara?
We have. We've got Alberto Costa next. And I thought this was interesting. So this is about Colin Pitchfork, who is up for parole hearings soon. But it touches on Dominic Raab, Deputy PM, who, of course, was sat next to Rishi Sunak today, because Alberto called for his constituents' views to be taken into account at this parole hearing. And Rishi Sunak mentioned the root and branch reform that they're making to the review process. And actually, I think something quite interesting about the role of ministerial direction is. So take a listen to this question that I think we'll have now.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As chairman of the All-Party Group for Greece, can I put on record how sad we all are for the tragic train accident that's happened in Greece and for the tragic loss of life? Mr. Speaker, double child rapist and killer Colin Pitchfork is once again up for parole next month. Now, I know the Prime Minister doesn't have any decision-making process in terms of the Independent Parole Board, but can he organise an urgent meeting with the Secretary of State for Justice so I can refer my constituents' views about this dangerous man and he can take that into account in his submissions to the Independent Parole Board?
Well, Mr. Speaker, Pitchfork's crimes were heinous, and our thoughts remain with Linda and Dawn's friends and family. My honourable friend knows that it is for the parole board to determine these decisions, but my honourable friend, the Deputy Prime Minister, will be submitting his views on the Pitchfork case to the parole board before the oral hearing, is happy to meet with the honourable gentleman again. And we have also recently published a root and branch review of the parole board system, which outlined our plans to introduce greater ministerial oversight. And I look forward to having the contributions and thoughts on that from my honourable friend.
Interesting, Lara. Actually, a good example of a backbench exchange working, because clearly Alberto Costa had told Rishi Sunak what he was going to, at least a broad sense of what he was going to ask about, so that he'd obviously got a pre-prepared answer and he could give an answer at all, albeit probably not the answer that Alberto Costa wanted.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, what was interesting just watching that on the screen then was Dominic Raab, it looks sweaty quite often, but gave quite a clearly incredulous glance towards Rishi Sunak at the first hearing of that, but then looked quite tense at Rishi Sunak actually committing to there being some sort of meeting or some sort of oversight or contribution that would be possible for Alberto in this case. Yeah, but I think, again, very interesting on the kind of increasingly politicised role that it looks like those hearings will be taking.
I think we've probably got time for one more.
Yeah, I would love to play one more. So we've got Craig Tracy, Tory MP. Like we said before, unlikely that we were going to see an absence of small boats being raised by Tory MPs on the backbenches today. Nothing like what we saw last week, where, of course, there are multiple questions, but still, here's Craig Tracy kind of trying to get a firm commitment for when we might be seeing that legislation on small boats coming before the House. Of course, that's something that a number of Tory MPs privately are pushing number 10 for reassurances on, something that they repeatedly tell journalists they get a lot of correspondence from angry constituents about.
Mr. Speaker, the tragic death of more than 50 people over the weekend when their small boat broke up off the coast of Italy is a sad reminder of the total disregard for life that the illegal traffickers who facilitate these crossings have in order to make their money. So can the Prime Minister set out what steps he's taken to bring an end to this barbaric trade and also to reassure my constituents that stopping illegal immigration remains a key priority for this government?
Prime Minister.
My honourable friend is right that the tragic incident near Italy at the weekend demonstrates how too well illegal crossings put lives at risk. That's why last year the Home Secretary and I announced five new measures to tackle the problem of small boats crossings, including the largest ever boats deal with France and a landmark deal with Albania. But we must do more. And as soon as the legislation is ready, it will be brought to this House to ensure that if you arrive in this country illegally, you will not be able to stay. You will be swiftly detained and removed to your own country or a safe third country alternative. That is the right and responsible way to tackle this problem.
Spell above and the Home Secretary sitting there nodding next to Rishi Sunak. This remains a big issue, Tim, and it's one of Rishi Sunak's top five priorities: stop the boats.
It is. He has five priorities, five pledges. Well, Keir Starmer has five missions. Very important.
But the trouble is, but it's Rishi Sunak's are more specific, and therefore yes, they are. Harder to meet.
And actually, Rishi Sunak initially said he would pass legislation to try to stop the boats. Now he's pledging to stop the boats because it's a lot shorter to stick on a strap line, and you know, doing that by the end of the year is going to be more problematic. And MPs want to see this legislation, and Sunak may just have bought himself a little bit of time with this Northern Ireland deal, though, because everyone was saying, where's the deal? You've done the deal. Why are you poring over all the detail? Why are you taking an age over it? And most people seem persuaded that that was worthwhile now. And he can maybe turn around to some of his MPs and say, look, I got this right. I'm hoping that I'm going to get the small boats legislation right as well. Give me time and we'll get it right.
Some of them might think, well, actually, maybe he could build a constructive relationship with France, which would be a starting point.
Well, and that was part of the argument that people were beginning to get into last week when, some people, including Boris Johnson, were still pushing this Northern Ireland Protocol bill. People in Downing Street were saying, well, look, you know, that will blow up any chance we've got of getting any further progress with the French. And the Home Secretary, you know, is building a relationship there and we need to crack on with that instead. It's going to remain a big issue, but we wait and see precisely what they've come up with. We know that, again, you know, a bit like the Brexit deal, we know the broad thrust of what they're trying to do, but it's getting the... You know, the devil's always in the detail, and it's getting
that's almost worth a ring of the bell.
So working properly written down.
So a Tory MP yesterday said they wanted to take a detailed look at the detail, which I thought was particularly good. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget, you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio, and we bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcasts from?
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is brought to you by Luton Rising, owners of London Luton Airport, the UK's most socially impactful airport. Find out more at lutonrising.org.uk.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.